Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We've got a lot happening on the show for you this week. First up is Nancy Sokolowski, a breast health specialist associated with Yale University. She'll be talking about how to take care of yourself if you are diagnosed with breast cancer. She has tips on how to deal with your emotions, coping with stress, how to handle telling your children, and a whole bunch more. We then speak with Christine Eisner about streamlining your home as we head into the winter months. We top things off with an exciting new remix from Lady Gaga, Marry the Night.
Capture your need for sound.
220,000 women are diagnosed with breast cancer each year. Getting the diagnosis is quite overwhelming, and one of the first questions that pops up is, what should I do next? Someone who can help answer that is Nancy Sokolowski, a nationally recognized breast health specialist associated with the Yale University School of Medicine and co-author of the Breast Cancer Companion, a guide for the newly diagnosed. Nancy, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
I'm delighted to be here.
Nancy, what happens to most women when they get the news that they have breast cancer? Do they sort of go into shock and denial?
Yes, absolutely. They become so fearful that it immobilizes them. That's why this book is the absolute item for them to have in their hands. It's an organizer, it's a journal, it's a planner, it's a record keeper, because they're going to forget things as the doctors talk to them.
And I'm assuming that, you know, it's quite understandable, obviously, that, you know, they're on this sort of emotional roller coaster and probably, you know, losing a bit of control emotionally at the time as they process the news. But I'm assuming this is definitely not the time to go into a tailspin. What should they do first?
The first thing is to take a deep breath. Now, that may sound crazy, but you take a deep breath and realize that you have time to learn. In other words, there's a great deal that goes into the decision-making because you need to know the pathology of your particular cancer. In other words, what kind of breast cancer do I have? It makes a difference as to how the treatment will be planned. Don't let people talk you into, they did this and they did that, because you know what? Only you have your kind of breast cancer. So gather all the needed information, which this book has. This is a step-by-step book in terms of what to do now, what to do next, but to do it with knowledge. Knowledge, as we all know, is power. And that makes you feel much more powerful instead of feeling defeated.
And Nancy, what do they do when it comes to their medical team? Should they be researching, you know, their credentials to see if that team is the right fit for them?
Well, you know, in the book, I do mention the medical team. And the medical team is a lot of different people. It's not one single person. Lots of times you think it's just the doctor. But in this situation, it is not. You need all of these team members. I'll just mention a few besides your primary physician. There's a breast health navigator. Now, what would that be? Well, that's a nurse who is certified in breast health education. And she navigates you. By that, I mean takes you by the hand and literally step by step takes you through it. Now, this position is going to be mandated at all medical centers, cancer centers that is, starting in 2015. It's a free service for all breast patients, and it's something to ask for should this come into your life.
And what types of questions, you know, should they be asking their doctors and other healthcare professionals? Because as you mentioned, you know, it's just such a big shock.
Well, it is. That's why within the book, each department, whether it's surgery or whether it's chemotherapy or whether it's radiation or breast cancer, reconstruction or clinical trials, I have listed the questions to ask. So you're prepared. You don't have to dream them up yourself. They're right here within the book. And then there's also a journal section of the book where you can write down the answers to the questions you just asked. And don't be afraid to be very pointed in your concerns. For instance, how is this going to affect my family? I have a section on how to talk to the children, because children obviously need to know, not in an alarming situation or not in a fearful situation, they just need to know what's going on within the family. And then I have a section for the husbands or partners, whichever way the person is singularly developed. In other words, what do you tell that person? How do you include them? Now, that's a word that's so very, very important, being included, being kept up to date on what's going on. No one can read your mind, so you have to be more verbal, communication then becomes the essence of every relationship within this new diagnosis.
And something I wanted to ask you, Nancy, for example, my mom went through breast cancer back in 2009, and I knew that obviously, well, it was very shocking to me, obviously, when she got diagnosed, and obviously way more so for herself. And I guess it's because I know the type of person that my mom is, and I knew that she would need a bit of extra help sort of learning about her particular type of cancer and just sort of learning about what the possibilities were of treatment and all that sort of stuff. So I kind of took on the role of like a researcher, and then I would sort of bring the information to her in like an organized fashion so that we could go over things together. Is that important for a woman to have like a person who's there for them as they're kind of in that shock and denial stage, because like the other person may have a bit of a clearer head at that point?
Well, you know what you're describing? You're describing the role of an advocate. And advocacy today in the medical scenario is very common and very popular. Actually, there is a degree now that a person would get to credential themselves to be an advocate, such as you just described. And their job would be to stay with that person throughout their experience, whatever that turns out to be. And it's a cost item for that person who's hired the advocate. But I'm suggesting this book can be the person's advocate. I don't know if you've seen this book in its entirety, but it has every item that you'd possibly need. Even the glossary, which is all the words connected to breast cancer, they are in this book at the very back, and they're only words that are significant for breast cancer. So many books have, you know, an alphabet, A to Z, all kinds of words, but they're not relevant to just one topic as is in this book. So anytime a doctor talks to a patient, she could flip to the back and say, oh, that's what he meant. Here it is right here. And he said, I didn't have that, but I had this. So it's a very clarifying kind of event to be able to have a glossary of that nature. But what you did for your mom, it would be wonderful if everyone had an advocate such as yourself. That isn't always the case, but that's why this book is helpful.
Okay. Joining us on the show is Nancy Sokolowski, a nationally recognized breast health specialist associated with the Yale University School of Medicine and co-author of The Breast Cancer Companion. Nancy, how does a woman prepare for treatment?
It depends on which treatment. First of all, I'm going to say once again, knowledge is power, so she needs to know what's going on and why. Why are they doing this to me? How am I going to feel? What's the outcome intended? Will I have side effects? If they are, how do I handle those? And I cover that in my book, too. If we were to talk about chemotherapy, as we most people know, is a form of medication. But there's very many different kinds of chemotherapy. Many times a person will not understand what the intention of it is. They think they're going to have one or two treatments, and that's the end of it. It isn't usually that way. There's usually a whole plan of treatments. And you go from one kind of drug, perhaps, to another kind of drug. All this, of course, is very dependent on the pathology. Pathology being the kind of breast cancer you have and the indicators. There's indicators or markers, we call them, that say how virile the cancer is. Is it aggressive or is it passive or is it something that can be done in a very easy way, maybe not using chemotherapy? And there again, that's going to be an age-related event. If a woman is over 75 and she's had very good health, she may be a candidate for some surgery, but let's suggest that she's 75 and she's had five or six bouts of other kinds of illness, and she wouldn't be a candidate for surgery. There are ways to treat it just as well. So it's a very individual kind of disease, and that's why it has to have an individual plan.
Now, apart from a woman's, you know, medical team, how important is it for her to have, you know, a strong support system at home, and what should her family and friends be doing to help her through this?
Okay, that's a very good question, because you can't go through it alone. It's almost impossible because your mind kind of gets ahead of the whole game. So in the book is the section on journaling, and that's where you put all your activities that you're doing. In other words, there's an appointment section. There's a calendar section where you can put everything that's going on. There's even a medical history section, so that at one swift motion, you pick up the book and you take it with you to all your appointments. Now, the family member, if there is one, could easily go with you to every meeting that you have. You also have the opportunity to record what the medical person is saying to you. I would highly recommend joining a support group. I ran a support group for newly diagnosed breast cancer patients, and it was focused totally on education. So many breast cancer support groups are focused strictly on emotional support. But, you know, emotional support is wonderful, and we did that as an adjunct, but the education part of it is what saved the day. And then following your healing, complete healing, of course, you probably should join the survivorship group. There are millions of women today who are long-term survivors in this country, and getting connected with them and having a buddy can be very soothing and very emotionally supporting.
Even though she's, you know, undergoing a lot of stress and emotional turmoil, you know, trying to keep everything on the rails with just, you know, having the news, trying to push forward, trying to keep her life on the rails, especially if she's still got a job, I'm assuming it's very important to be organized with her medical records and course of treatment information as well.
Yes, and there's a section called record keeping, and in that part of this is not a normal kind of book where you sit down and read chapter, chapter, chapter. This is a book that it's more like a workbook. It has these separate sections that you can get what you need. For instance, there's an insurance section, and the conversation that you can have with your insurance company is right there. You don't have to make it up. It's there for you to use. And within the conversation, of course, there'll be questions, and they'll talk about your coverage, so that when you get off that phone, you have all the information you need. Along with that, there's going to be a medication log where whatever medications you are currently on, you want to write those down because the doctor who's treating your cancer will have to say to you, what else are you being treated for at this time? And knowing that, you have to be sure the medications for a previous illness don't conflict with anything you'd be taking now. There's a medical bills and expenses tracker in there. So, for instance, if you submitted a bill to anybody that's covering your expenses, you would have a place to put the date, where you sent it, what your expectation is in return, and you can keep track of it. So it's called a tracker. So there's all kinds of supports, and that's a support system, knowing that you have all your records in the same place and that you know what you're doing, because you won't have the intensity of remembering all of this because you're coming into a world that you haven't been in before. It's like a foreign language.
And Nancy, just as you mentioned, you know, it sounds like it's obviously an overwhelming place to be as you sort of march through those initial steps of getting diagnosed with breast cancer. But I'm assuming that even though there's so much going on, especially if a woman has a family with kids, and I know that she would probably be trying to make sure everything's okay for them and the husband or her partner. But I think it's just of utmost importance, obviously, that a woman is trying to take care of her stress level and also, you know, taking care of her body by eating properly throughout treatment.
Yes, and one of the things that's very important to do is I have a section called Feel Better by Living Well. And by that, what I mean is being physically active. Exercise with a friend. Keep a written log of your schedule and your accomplishments so you feel good about yourself. Have a backup plan in bad weather. So if you were planning on walking at 9 o'clock and it's raining, you have a backup plan. Invest in a pedometer so you can feel good about your distance and how much success you're having with your exercise. And maybe include music in your life. Music is a very soothing and supporting activity. Plan active weekends so that you're not alone. Weekends are the hardest time if it's a single woman. So you want to plan something there, maybe a nature walk, maybe something at a museum. Be active throughout the day. Don't let you know, isolation become part of your companion, and you want to have activities. And that's where you get connections when you go to support groups. As I said, I ran an education support group for about 25 years, and the attendance was always very high, and I was always delighted to see women connect with women and become friends. And they would see each other outside of the group, perhaps for an early breakfast or a late tea, anything at all to stay connected and to share. They shared a great deal with one another. And that's a beauty of having something that somebody else has in the sense that you connect with them. You want to be sure that you eat well during this period of time, too, because sometimes when people are under stress or anxious, they forget to eat. And then what they do eat is on the run, so it's not healthy eating. One of the things I instituted at our facility was to have a nutritional consult at the time of your diagnosis, so that you could plan with somebody who obviously knew exactly what you should be eating. In other words, you'd want to have low-fat dairy products, you'd want to have leaner meats, drink lots of water, little or no alcohol, and no soy products. Soy products have a sense of indicator of hormones in them, so you don't want to have anything that's hormonal.
And something that sort of struck me as you were talking, Nancy, is I know, and I guess I wanted your opinion on it, because there is, you know, the emotional part of the woman that has to deal just with the shock and the pain and, oh my God, why is this happening to me? And then there's the other part of her that has to be like this focused individual. If she is going through this relatively alone without like a big support system at home, does she need to kind of separate her brain a little bit to allow herself the time to cry, but then to sort of knuckle down and say, like, I need to get these things done?
You can cry as often as you want to. That is not an issue. Emotion. Some people carry their emotions on their sleeve, as we say, and so they need that event to be able to have the cry. And once they have the cry, they feel better. But some of the things that they might consider doing when emotions seem to be taking over is either, if they don't know how, take 10 to 20 minutes a day and maybe do some meditation or some visualization or maybe some yoga. Join a group of people doing those kinds of things so that you can learn what to do. There's also wonderful progressive relaxation therapy. And many times we cry because we're so tense, we don't know how to relax. You want to remove the stress in your life. What is causing you the most concern? If there is one particular topic, maybe the, let's say, babysitting your child when you go to appointments and you're a single mom. We have, at most places, services to take care of that. In other words, you can bring the child with you, and there's someone at the facility and they go into a room where you can all play while the mother's getting her treatment. So there's things like that to look into, depending on where you're receiving your care.
When the woman comes through the other side of breast cancer and, you know, things are going in a more positive direction, what steps, you know, should she take or need to follow, you know, as she tries to continue this healthy way and this healthy path, you know, with her new life, I guess we'll put it that way.
Yes. There is a page in the book concerning normal screenings or preventive behaviors once you're fully recovered from this experience. And I think it's very important to recognize how many screenings there are to stay well. For instance, you should have blood pressure screening. You should have a colonoscopy if you're 50 or over on an annual basis, depending on your medical history. In other words, if there's colon cancer in the family, you want to be sure that you have it more often than less and start sooner rather than later. You want to be sure that you're having an annual physical. An annual physical is going to pick up things that you don't even know you have, and that's the benefit of having screenings, is that you find things you didn't know you had, and that means you're not symptomatic of whatever it is, and therefore the outcome is always more positive in terms of recovery. So you want to be sure you're having your screenings, and as I say, there's a page in the book that gives you exactly what you should be having and how often you should do it. And it is important to stay well. In other words, just because you had this experience with cancer, it is not the end of your life. Most women survive breast cancer. And today, when we're talking about early detection and prevention, the earlier something is found, obviously the better the outcome. And most breast cancers, you aren't symptomatic. Maybe you've been doing mammograms according to your plan, and that would be every year starting at age 40. And maybe you've been doing monthly breast self-examinations, which, of course, you should carry on forever because, you know, not everything is picked up by a mammogram. So you want to be sure you're using other methods of detection, and that would give you the betterment of finding things sooner. That isn't to say that everybody in this country is going to get breast cancer. Only 1 out of 8 women will get breast cancer if they live to be 80 years old. So you don't have to say, oh, my goodness, it's a given. It is not a given. But it's always a surprise as to who gets breast cancer. And some families have genes that predict that they will get it more than others. And so if you do have, we might call a history in the family, maybe Grammy had it, maybe an aunt had it, maybe a cousin had it, then you need to be, your surveillance needs to be more up, more in front rather than waiting to see if something happens. You have to be proactive, in other words, by having all your screenings.
Perfect. That's amazing. And the book just sounds awesome, Nancy. And I was just wondering if you could tell people where they can get their hands on it.
Yes, they can. And it's a marvelous book. If you go up on Amazon.com and just put in breast cancer and my name, Nancy Sokolowski, it'll pop right up there. And there's a nice big discount there. You can go into any Barnes & Noble across the country. They have it. You can call Demos Publishing, which is the company that published the book, and they have it. All the libraries in the country have it if you want to see it. When you go on the computer, if you put in, as I say, my name, it'll pop up. It'll give you pages in the book that you can read prior to buying it. So I would mostly suggest that this book be in the home of every woman in this country. I also want to tell you that it was the recipient of the Best Consumer Health Book for 2010, and this award is given out by the American Journal of Nursing, and that was for last year, because that's the year it came out. And it was a marvelous credential to get, because basically what they said is it includes medical bills and expense trackers, something most cancer patients won't think about until the bills have scattered or been lost. It has an excellent resource section for patients who want more details than are in this ready, quick guide. It organizes information chronologically in the order that decisions need to be made and includes practical suggestions that will put the patient in charge. And that's what we're talking about. You want to feel like you're in charge. So it's a soup to nuts approach to how to get through this without the emotional pain and suffering that you hear about so often.
Nancy, if people wanted to reach you directly, if they had questions, how can they reach you?
They could email me at nanosok@yahoo.com. I'd be more than happy to talk with them.
Excellent. Nancy, thank you so much for your time today. I just think it's been wonderfully educational for all of our listeners. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
That's Nancy Sokolowski, again, a nationally recognized breast health specialist associated with the Yale University School of Medicine and co-author of The Breast Cancer Companion.
Stand by.
The Love Zone
with Gina Lee
on The Kelly Alexander Show.
I'm Gina Lee, and today's topic in The Love Zone is about loving you. Are you on the list of people you love? Did you even think to put yourself there? Many of us define ourselves by who we love, but do you love you? Off the bat, many would say, why, yes, of course I love myself. But if you examine the people around you and the habits you engage in, the opposite may be true. The concept of self-love may seem, well, selfish, but it's actually very necessary if you intend to develop and maintain meaningful relationships. I can't be good to you if I'm not good to me, right? Some of us are very good at loving, giving, and caring for others, but have difficulty practicing it on ourselves. A lack of self-love will put you in some messed up situations where love is something to be pursued and earned, not realizing that you must first possess it within yourself. The love that comes to you is a reflection of the love you already have. So how do you practice self-love? Get to know yourself. Make a list of all the things that make you, you. Become conscious of who you are, not what you think you should be. Accept all that you see unconditionally. Never mind the flaws, we all got them. It's what you do in spite of them that matters. You are a work in progress, but in this moment, you are complete. Let that sink in for a bit. Right now, you are complete. Do you believe what I'm telling you? Is there a little voice in your head saying otherwise? The minute we start to analyze ourselves, we start to criticize ourselves, finding fault in a million things, and all that does is distract us from the power we have to transform ourselves and the world around us. There's only room for one in the driver's seat of your mind, so who are you letting take the wheel of your thoughts? You really have to make a conscious decision to live a happy and fulfilled life. So many of us take things as they come, living by default, so to speak, never asking for more nor expecting much in the first place. Just as a flower needs water and sunlight to grow, you have to nurture yourself in every way, expecting the best and believing you deserve it. Wouldn't you want the best for someone you love? Once you start to think positively about yourself, just like that flower, you begin to blossom. And those positive thoughts turn into positive actions that will move you towards the relationships necessary for your growth. When you're in a loving state of mind, you approach life differently. You start to surround yourself with people who complement your outlook and pull away from those who don't. You can't love yourself and be in a relationship where you are treated badly. Those two mindsets can't coexist. You can't attract real love if you don't have real love for yourself. You may attract someone willing to give you real love, but if you don't love yourself, you'll be unable to accept it, and that love won't last. Too many times we sabotage our own happiness because we don't feel we deserve it. Practicing self-love takes practice. You have to be vigilant with your thoughts and actions, always making sure that the things you do and say are positive and conducive to your life goals. It requires you to let go of your fears and self-doubt and to be truthful with yourself on all levels. Trust yourself. Forgive yourself, believe in yourself, follow your dreams, find your joy and stay in it. Be the love you want to see and it will be.
Silicone, I prefer my own. What God gave me is just fine. Oh, I'm the
are smack dab in the autumn season, and for a lot of us, we start to get the idea of hibernation, staying indoors, snuggling, and staying warm as the weather gets colder and colder. Now, even though we think this is the season to sort of hunker down inside, it should also be a time to reflect on what we've got going on inside our homes, and if there's some sort of way to pare down our belongings and create more room for, you know, those long winter months ahead. To help us figure out how to organize ourselves is lifestyle expert and author of Comfort Living, a Back to Basics Guide to a More Balanced Lifestyle, Christine Eisner. Christine, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you. It's so good to be back.
Christine, everyone talks about, you know, spring cleaning inside our homes, but shouldn't there also be like a fall cleaning too after the summer months when, you know, we may have been out and about at garage sales collecting things and now we've got a bunch of stuff to deal with?
I actually think fall cleaning makes more sense in our society now than spring cleaning. Spring cleaning was, you know, that sort of was something that was earlier in the century. But now, and this is something that I've done with my kids, for a lot of parents, you know, before the holidays come and more stuff comes into their rooms, your house, and as you said, you know, we keep gathering things. We have to make the time to pare down and let go and make room for, you know, for more positive, whether it's things or experiences. If you're all chock-a-block in your house, then you just get overwhelmed, and what a horrible thing to happen right before, you know, what really is an incredibly wonderful part of the year, which is Thanksgiving and Christmas and Hanukkah, and, you know, and already coming into the new year. I mean, I was actually going past a department store 2 days ago, and literally here we are, you know, just after Halloween, and they, you know, they were already putting the decorations up for Christmas.
Wow. And something I wanted to ask you, you know, because you mentioned the word overwhelmed, and I think that's something I wanted to ask you about in regards to where do we begin? Because I think the worst feeling is of being overwhelmed. So do we make like a plan and follow it, or do we just sort of follow our gut?
Well, you know, and I talk about this in my book. To me, overwhelmed is an overwhelming word. So is stress and all of that. I like to look at it as just being out of balance. Because, you know, when we've got too much, when we look around our spaces and we've got too much of one thing in our space, if there's too much summer in our space and here we are headed into November, then, you know, you rebalance by taking some of that out. So instead of creating this master plan and this whole complicated sort of thing, I like to keep it simple, because the more simple we make it, the more likely it's going to happen. So I, you know, what I like to really encourage people to do is to really just to look and see what's out of balance. And if it's that you don't have enough free time, you're really busy, then you need to put the brakes on something. If it's that your closets are totally packed up and you don't even have room to put your, you know, your own clothes back in, then, you know, you need to rebalance that and pull some stuff out. If you're eating out too much, now, you need to get some, go to the grocery store and get some, you know, eggs, you know, whatever, some basic ingredients, and start making some meals at home. But to me, the best way to not be overwhelmed or to be less overwhelmed is to just think about what is there that's too much in my life, and what's the flip side of that, and how can I bring that into to get more balance.
Is it important to get rid of excess clutter, especially in the fall? Because I think a lot of us, depending on where you're living, but definitely in the Northeast and I guess even just the Midwest, you know, a lot of people are going to be stuck inside during these upcoming winter months.
I think it's hugely important, because the more room we have, the more sort of white space we have in our lives, the more we can think, the more we can, you know, find those good moments. So I think that psychologically it's hugely important. And, you know, we all think about, oh, well, you know, they're the hoarders and all of that kind of thing. Well, it, you know, everybody in their own way brings on things that too many things, and they become obstacles to living well, obstacles to quality of life. So, you know, if you look around your room, you know, or your apartment or your home, I think it's really important not only to, you know, to look on the shelves, and there might be things on your shelves that have been there for, you know, 10 years, let alone one season. And maybe it was really special, that book or that picture or whatever, when you put it up there 10 years ago or 20 years ago. You know, maybe those pictures of your, you know, those baby pictures, you know, maybe your kids now are being, you know, going to soccer banquets.
you know, and graduating from college. So, you know, when you revive your space, when you put current energy into your space, it makes the biggest difference in how you feel and your level of optimism. And, you know, I think depression and obesity is in large part, and I'm not quoting any statistics, but I really do think that depression and obesity are because people don't make room in their own lives for their own presence.
Oh, that's really interesting to think about. I think that's really interesting to think about, because I think a lot of us are so willing to do things for other people or think we have to do this, that, or the other, that we don't actually end up thinking about what's best for us.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you think about also, you know, now the days are getting shorter. Daylight savings time. Do you guys? I'm in
yep.
the United States.
Yeah.
You all have been. Daylight savings time happens, and all of a sudden we're hit with, you know, not only the days are shorter, but all of a sudden it gets dark a lot faster. And so, you know, we need to think about even just simple things like, okay, you know, do we need a lamp in a room to, you know, and maybe put a light timer on that lamp, not to keep the burglars out, but to actually turn on maybe before you come home after work or after, you know, carpool or whatever. Think about things that can actually create some positive energy in your home. And so it's as much about what you take out. And as you said, decluttering, I call it streamlining, because to me, streamlining is about getting rid of the obstacles that get in the way of quality of life. But it's also, really importantly, about bringing in things that will revive you, that will energize you. So it might be just putting a light timer on a lamp, or going out and getting some pine cones, putting them in a, you know, big basket, or some gourds or flowers. You know, and, you know, if the weather's really lousy, then, you know, buying some daisies or some tulips or whatever it is. Those kinds of things are really just as important, if not more important. But if you still have your place surrounded, you know, surrounded and filled up with all these obstacles, then doesn't matter what you do to bring in new energy. All that other stuff is just going to suck the life out of it.
Joining us on the show is lifestyle expert and author of Comfort Living, Christine Eisner. Make sure to check her out, www.comfortlivingbychristine.com. Christine, something that you mentioned just a few moments ago, which made me sort of want to ask you this question because of where we are right now in technology. You mentioned just sort of briefly books and I guess like sort of, you know, what are you doing with books in the house or whatever. Do you think now is the time that people should be leaning more towards, you know, reading their books on their mobile device and because that's going to cut down on actual clutter, if you want to call it, in the house? Or do you still think it's important that people do have, you know, a hard copy at some point?
You know, I think it's really personal. I, you know, some people, I think, you know, if you're moving around a lot, if you've got one of these days and you've got time in the car or time, you know, on the train or whatever it is, and carrying a downloaded book makes more sense, then that's great. But you know, I think that having books, to me, I mean, I'm actually looking at some bookshelves right now, and they have, you know, there are books on there that I'm you know, cookbooks and whatever, and even the spines of books, you know, on a bookshelf can inspire you. But again, you know, if you got too many, or if you've got books, you know, like in your child's room, if you've got their storybooks from when they were, you know, picture books from when they were 2 years old, and now they're 12 years old, or let's say even 22 years old, and they've moved out of the house, hopefully, then it's time to get rid of the picture books and maybe pass them on to someone else. Now, what a great present to give, you know, to give someone, you know, who's having a child, you know, a collection of your child's favorite books, or, you know, put them up in the attic so that your child can give them to their kids. But, you know, I think books are very, very special. I think there are a lot of messages that we can give ourselves in our homes, and I think books are part of that. So are photographs. So are just, you know, something that someone's given you, or whether it's passed down in the family. But so I think that, you know, I don't think there are any rules for anything, but I do think that it is nice that, you know, if you don't want to buy a book, you know, and you don't want to go to the library to rent it, you know, you can, or you don't want to store a book, let's say, you can download it. And then when it's done, you don't have to deal with it, you know, getting rid of it, or, you know, it being an obstacle in your life.
And you mentioned quickly as well, photographs. How do you feel about that? Because I think some people, and I know there's some people that are very tasteful, I guess, if I can use that word, about how many photographs they have out, and it's there's like a system or some kind of theme. But sometimes I feel it's like people just threw up their photos all over the place. What do you say to that? And do you think too, like having those automated, photographs where it's on like a rotation and you've got like 20 going, but it's all in one picture frame. Like, what's the balance there?
Well, I think digital, I am not a tech person, though I am on Twitter. And by the way, my handle is comfort_living. But you know, I'm not a real tech person, but I think digital frames are really cool because they scroll by. And so, you know, I have one by the sink. I don't love doing dishes. And so if I'm doing the dishes and I see pictures of my family or travel scrolling by, it's really cool. And that way, you know, you can keep that fresh. But I think that there can be too many photographs. And, you know, one thing is sometimes you buy one frame, you put a picture in, and gradually over time you've got all these photographs. Well, it may be the time to maybe freshen some up with new photographs, but also people always think about photographs as being in frames on shelves or on tables. I just recently, because I had a lot of accumulated photographs, I took some of the best ones and I put them on the wall. I hung them on the wall. On one wall in a den, and you know, all of a sudden, instead of a piece of artwork or instead of a poster or whatever it might be, a mirror, now I have 15 photographs in frames looking out at me. So, you know, again, I think that the thing to do is, and there's a whole politics about, you know, you don't want to have too many of one family member, you know, you want to sort of equalize it out, but I think also you don't want your photographs to be stuck in time. It's very easy to go on a photo rampage and you know, go out and buy 15 frames and put photographs in them. But, you know, 10 years later or 10 months later, you know, you might want to think about swapping some of them out.
Is this also a time, you know, as we march through sort of autumn towards winter, that you should be sort of disciplined with yourself and really ask yourself the hard questions about what furniture and accessories that you could actually part with?
Absolutely. And, you know, there are a lot of people right now, also a lot of organizations who are really looking for donations, whether it's furniture or accessories or clothes. You know, coming into the season, especially for with families with growing children, you know, you may find that, you know, the ski jackets and the pants and the mittens and, you know, all of that have been outgrown. So it's a great time, you know, to get rid of some of that stuff so that when you buy new stuff or somehow, you know, borrow or whatever you do for new stuff, then you've got room to put it. So I really like to use this time of the season to take, you know, before Thanksgiving, really the right after Halloween, before Thanksgiving is such a great time to just go through, look at, you know, one room at a time, one closet at a time, and just tell yourself you're going to take three things out. You don't have to do a whole overhaul. Take three things out or 30 things out, depending on where you are. But just go into each area and just try to get rid of some stuff. And you'll find that you end up coming into Thanksgiving. Well, actually, I'm saying Thanksgiving, but that's really a U.S. holiday. You're coming into the season, the holiday season, with just sort of a cleaner feel and room. To, you know, someone, if you end up finding something really wonderful, well, gosh, you know, it's sort of nice to be able to have a place in your house to put it, or a place in your closet to hang it.
Once you do declutter or streamline, I like that word better too, would this be a good time to do some, you know, minor repairs in the house and maybe even repaint a room or reorganize some of your space so that you're maximizing it?
Yeah, I actually do that kind of thing, some of that in summer also. Because there's sort of downtime and we're more outside. And so then, you know, instead of being inside when paint's drying, it's sort of nice not to have to deal with that. But I think now is a great time to do that. It's a great time to, you know, look and see if your carpets need cleaning, look and see if, you know, whatever, if there's some pillows or, you know, throw pillows or something that, you know, maybe need to have new inserts put in, or, you know, if his fabric is torn, or, you know, get things mended. This is a perfect time to do that. And so it is. So it also is, you know, in the January, February, but it's just really nice to sort of come into the season when you sort of feel like, you know, you've got your, you know, it's like when we were little and we made these forts, you know, and you know, it was all set up, and all we had to do was go in and live it and enjoy it. It's really nice because sometimes, you know, as the days, as I said, get shorter and that kind of thing, sometimes it's really nice to know that, you know, if you reach into the cabinet, you know, where you keep your teas, that all the, you know, all the old teas are, you know, you've already gotten rid of that. You've gotten rid of your old spices or whatever it might be, or even inside your refrigerator. You know, just think of you know, of purging some of that stuff. And the way to look at it is, do I need it? Or do I like it? And if the answer is no for both of those, then you can, you know, then you can get rid of it. And that can be by, you know, throwing it away. But hopefully instead of that, you can give it to someone, as I said, with like the storybooks, you can give it to someone else who might really want it. And you might donate it, or, you know, maybe you can recycle it. But it's just amazing the feeling of lightness that you get when you unburden yourself from this kind of thing.
Is this also a time, you know, after you streamline, when you and your partner or you and your family sort of start to think about renovations or changes that you may want to make in a few months when the weather actually gets nice again? Like, is this a time maybe to plan for 6 months from now?
Yeah, it really is, because as you're looking around, you know, I literally would go, I would suggest to your listeners to get a pad and go each room in the house and do it. If you live with someone, do it with, you know, the person or people that you live with, and just sort of make a list. This needs to be repainted. This, gosh, wouldn't it be great if, you know, if we change out these window treatments? Do we need this? And just go through and make a list. And some of the stuff is stuff you can knock right off, and that's the stuff for right now. Then there are other things that are going to take more time. Some things might need to be taken out to get repaired. And other things, as I said, you know, during that summertime when people are outside, that may be the time to do some major painting and that type of work. But it's a great time to just sort of, you know, plan ahead. And I think everybody does better when they sort of have a path ahead of them. I think part of what contributes to that feeling of being overwhelmed is when we feel like our lives are living us, our homes are controlling us, instead of us having control over where we live and how we live.
And Christine, you know, I guess I always like to leave listeners with a plan of action, I guess. So if you were to speak to them, obviously, directly right now, what would be your top tips moving forward, again, trying to streamline their lives as they head towards this holiday season?
I would say, take a look in your rooms and first try to get rid of the things that are summer, you know, from summer, and make room for things that are about fall and winter. That's what I would say first. And then secondly, I would go through each room and take out three things and either put them away, store them, or give them away, or throw them away. And then thirdly, I would make a list of long-term stuff that you can be doing over the next 6 to 9 months.
And Christine, before I let you go, I want to talk to you about this new initiative that you're involved with. I just want you to tell us about it, because I know you and I were talking about it prior to the interview.
Yeah, it's really cool. And speaking of the storybooks, children's storybooks, this whole movement, this is an online community, sort of like Facebook, but this is for teens and tweens, and since the reality is that our kids are online, this is actually a new online community, a new website called changemyworldnow.com. And it is a place where teens and tweens can go to literally have content, be able to get involved with content that will help them feel better about themselves, tap into what their passions are, and really get some skills and some experience that will help them literally change their world. So it's a very cool online community. I created an activity for kids to create their own zone, their own comfort zone. And it's not about making redoing your room. This is for kids of any socioeconomic level. So this is literally creating their own zone in a shoebox, and so that they can put it on a shelf or take it with them, or, you know, not all of us have homes. But it's very cool. And the book that it's based on, which is Cassandra's Angel, it is fast becoming. It was 19th on the Barnes & Noble bestseller list last week, and it's climbed since then. But this is one of those books I just bought, and obviously I just bought about 20 copies to give to gifts, and these are not just kids. These are to my friends, family members, because it's all about this whole Change My World Now movement is about finding your own bright light and letting it shine to the rest of the world. So Cassandra's Angel, in addition to my own book, Comfort Living, is but Cassandra's Angel is a really, really special holiday gift for your viewers, for your listeners to think about.
That's fantastic. And again, to check out that website, it's changemyworldnow.com. Christine, thank you so much for joining us, joining us on the show this week. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Love being with you.
That's lifestyle expert and author of Comfort Living. Again, Christine Eisner. Make sure to check her out, www.comfortlivingbychristine.com.
Bring on the remix.
I'm gonna marry the night. Oh, won't give up on my life. I'm a warrior queen, live passionately tonight. I'm gonna marry the dark. Gonna make love to the star. I'm a soldier to my own emptiness. I'm a winner.
On the Kelly Alexander Show. A big thank you going out to my guests this week, Nancy Sokolowski, Christine Eisner, as well as the always amazing Gina Lee with The Love Zone. And as per usual, I want to leave you with your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time from Anthony Robbins. One reason so few of us achieve what we truly want is that we never direct our focus. We never concentrate our power. Most people dabble their way through life, never deciding to master anything in particular. If you have any comments or questions, I always appreciate it. Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Kelly Alexander, as well as our Facebook page, The Kelly Alexander Show. Have a great week. You and I'll talk soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.